Hello, my name is Marjorie Wingrove, and I'm the host of this show, Death Happens, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio 92.7 CFFF. I've created this show as a way to normalize the conversation around death-related topics. Death is inevitable for every living thing. I believe that knowledge and preparation can create some comfort and peace of mind. My guest today is Frank Peters, and he chose this song, It's a Wonderful World, from Louis Armstrong. It's one Frank once played at his funeral when the time comes.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. Much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful.
Frank Peters is a funeral pre-planning advisor employed with Comstock K here in Peterborough and Dignity Memorial. Frank's background is primarily in the restaurant industry, but he also spent some time traveling extensively with a band.
What was the name of the band?
The band was called Avalon. They were a progressive rock band from Ottawa through the 70s, I guess, really, when I was traveling with them was about 1978. That was a while ago.
A little bit.
Played a lot of different places, a lot of... We did, you know, back in those days, you did high school dances, you did bars, lots of bars, were places like, but Toronto would have been the Gasworks and Larry's Hideaway and places like that. And they were big shows. Montreal might be the, on the West Island, there was a couple of bars that brought in progressive rock bands. And Quebec City, it was Le Cercle Électrique, the Electric Circle. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. And now you are a
pre-planning advisor, working with people that are pre-arranging for funeral services, ideally sometime way in the future. The process is really sitting down with people and trying to find out what's important to them and what can be the best way to on paper what your final wishes would be and how you'd like to be celebrated, primarily for two reasons. One is, and probably the most important one, is that by doing that, you're protecting whoever it is that is going to be speaking for you at that time from having to make literally 100 decisions. What we try to do is, when I sit with a family, is I try and get as many of those questions answered ahead of time so that nobody has to answer them at the time. And that really is the primary benefit of the service. You know, there's other reasons why people do it. Obviously, some of them are financial, but the primary one that when I talk to people, the very first question I ask them is, so what brings you here today and what would you like to accomplish? And inevitably, the answer is, well, I just really want to put something in place so my kids won't have to deal with this when I'm gone. If you don't do it, If you don't have pre-arrangements made, somebody, and it's usually the people I'm talking with, it's usually a spouse or the child that is going to be sitting with us, and they're going to be, we're going to say, okay, well, what would your mom wanted? What would your dad wanted? And they go, I don't know. We never really talked about it. What I do is I try and draw that out of them, out of people, as to what would you tell your children you want? If you're sitting, looking over it, and you're able to view this whole, this day of your celebration of life, what is it you would like to see? And that's the message we want to leave for your children. We have a number of ways of doing that. The basic approach that I take is to walk through what I call the easy conversation. And that's the conversation we have when it's just something that's going to happen one day. It's not in the immediate future, but it's something that is going to happen one day. So start out with the easy conversation, and it's really just talking about reflecting on what the family traditions might be, what their real expectations are. It's changed dramatically, I think, probably in the last 20 years. More and more people are looking at end-of-life celebrations as being a very personal thing, a very unique thing. And so my job is really to try and draw out of people and try and reflect on how that should look. Very often they say, oh, I just want something simple. You know, okay, what is simple?
In reality, none of this is simple.
It's simple now to talk about it because we're not talking about death. What we're talking about is putting a plan together. Of course, when it happens at the time, we call it the difficult conversation, when a family comes in and they didn't have anything. And now we're talking about death. The mindset changes dramatically. And now it becomes trying to make decisions in a very stressful time in your life, grieving, confused, you're overwhelmed. There's just so many things to decide. That's the long and the short of it. What we're trying to do is avoid that.
Yeah. And there's the money aspect too. They're trying to figure out whether they have enough money to cover what they want.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the benefits of pre-arranging from a financial standpoint, because that is the other, you know, the flip side of the coin, if you will, there's the emotional reasons for doing it and protecting your family. But the financial reasons for doing it are, the younger you are, the greater the financial benefit of doing it now. I was talking with a lady this week, she's in her 80s, I guess, and her husband passed in 1986. And she said, I'd like to have the same thing that I did for my husband when he passed. And we went on to talk about all the things that are important to her in terms of remembering her life. In her case, the most important thing was that she spent, I think 17 years in some fashion with the armed forces, and then another 40 years as a secretary or various other roles with the Canadian Legion. So she really, really wanted that represented. And of course, that's our job, is to make sure that those details of a person's life are reflected in their service. She said, well, I think I can find the paperwork. And I said, don't worry, that we have a history in many of our locations that dates back upwards of 40, 50, 100 years. And of course, we've documented everything along the way. We have all those documents. They're sometimes hard to find, but with a phone call, I was able to reach out to the funeral home that her husband was buried at, and I got a copy of his contract. Well, his service, she paid a grand total with tax of $3,800. Terrific. I mean, that's what it was in 1986. Well, today that same funeral is upwards of $11,000-$12,000. Had she booked it, had she prearranged it in 1986, she would be facing a situation where if she passed in the next 5 to 10 years, she would have that same service, full service funeral with a full Legion service at the funeral home with the poppies on the casket and everything that goes along with it for the $3,800 she paid in 1986. Instead of the $12,000 she's going to have to pay by prearranging it now. That's the financial reason people do it. When you purchase prearranged funeral services today, you're buying it in today's dollars. As a company, then we will honor that contract whenever it occurs, if it's 20 years from now, and the family won't have to pay another penny. So that's the financial reason to do it ahead of time. And is that's where I go back to when I said earlier, the younger you are, the greater the benefit.
That wasn't even on my radar when I started planning. So I'm really glad that I put that stash away.
Yeah. And it's, there's lots of things that when we're talking to people that they'll bring up, and he says, well, I have life insurance. And I kind of go like, and I said, well, you know, I bought life insurance. I think it was the first life insurance I bought was probably about 1980. And I can guarantee you when I bought that life insurance, I wasn't thinking, well, I got to have some money to pay for my funeral, for my family. What I was thinking was, well, if I've done this right and I have that money put aside, if I pass, my family's going to be able to continue on with relatively the same lifestyle as they had, as if I was there bringing in my money, you know, from my day-to-day job. So that was I was protecting their lifestyle. I wasn't putting money aside to make sure I got a good party at the end.
Right.
You know, that wasn't the point of my insurance. And I think most people would agree that that's not why they bought insurance. And of course, on top of that, there have been cases where, depending on the circumstances of the passing or of the death, the insurance company goes, I don't know. We want to look into this a little bit before we pay up this $250,000 or whatever you happen to have for insurance. And of course, unfortunately, when we deliver funeral services, they have to be paid for at the time. That's mostly because it's kind of hard to chase you when you're in a grave to get the money if we didn't get paid.
Okay, so say somebody doesn't have any money. Somebody's living on the street. How are their costs covered?
Well, there are social services available to truly people who truly can't afford it. They're managed mostly on a municipal basis, but it's back and legislated by the provincial government as to what can be provided for people who don't have the funds to have at least a minimal service at the time of their passing. And so we'll work with local social services in those cases. But again, the vast majority of people that we're talking to are people that have some means and they have some expectation of some kind of service. And it's very simple. It can range from the very least expensive minimal service would be literally ensuring that you came into our care at the time of passing, satisfied all of the sanitary requirements of preparation, that we arranged for cremation, and that tends to be about 50-50 now between cremation and burial with people. And then we just simply return the cremated remains to the family. So that would be the simplest and least expensive approach to it. Mm-hmm. There's many people where that's satisfactory because they have this vision that maybe they're going to be scattered in some favorite spot, or they're going to be buried in the backyard with their family pets, you know, that they've put back there over the years. One case really struck me because it was so poignant. The family that we were dealing with were trying to make arrangements for the grandpa. They've had a family cottage on one of the lakes. We have a product. It's an urn. It's made out of rock salt, and it's designed by its nature to dissolve in water anywhere from 4 to 5 hours. So by the time we were done, we had really determined that the celebration was going to be as follows. They would have a small reflection period at the funeral home. So they would, family only, would be able to come and say bye to grandpa. Those who wanted to, you know, pat him on the hand or pat him on the forehead would do so. Following that, we'd arrange for the cremation, and then we would return the cremated remains to them in this rock salt urn. And their plan was on the Canada Day long weekend. It was a family tradition. Everybody would come up to the family cottage, and they were going to take a little flotilla of boats out to the middle of the lake and just simply drop Gramp over the side of the boat, say a few words, maybe toast him with his a little bit of his favorite scotch, and then he would gradually sink to the bottom of the lake. 4 to 5 hours, he would dissolve. He'd become that part of that lake bed for the rest of eternity. So that every time the kids or grandkids were sitting there fishing off the dock, they'd be able to know they were fishing with grandpa. So, I mean, that one really, it made me feel good. They had a plan. I was able to help them put it together. And I gave them that peace of mind that, you know what, when that moment came, one phone call, they'd be able to reach out to us. And this happened to be in Peterborough at Comstock K. With that one phone call, we would take it from there. We'd honor his wishes and their wishes. That's when I feel like I've done a good job. I found out what was important to them. I helped them put it into kind of a frame of reference that they could really get their head around. And I gave them an option that when they left, I think they said, we really have got this figured out. We are going to do this right. Good feeling to get that done. That's, of course, why I do this. When you and I talked earlier, I spent the vast majority of my life in the hospitality business, in restaurants, and everything from, you know, fast food to, excuse the expression, balls to the walls nightclubs that I have 1,500 people on the property on a given night going crazy till 3 a.m. So I've done a lot of different types of hospitality business. And my stock in trade, if you will, what I always prided myself in was essentially my ability to put together a group of staff that would deliver consistently the highest level of genuine hospitality and service for the guests. And again, this is talked about earlier, is that virtually any restaurant can find a chef that'll make some good food. If you got enough money, you can build a beautiful place. So the atmosphere is going to be fine, but it's service that differentiates one over another. And that's why I pride myself in being a real specialist at. So I've just taken that when I made it, I decided that I didn't want to be in the restaurant business any longer. You know, the nights and weekends, the 50-hour week work week with a 20-hour work week pay. I decided it was time to find something new. And this business just came to me. This is the one. Once I started to look into it, I said, this is what I'm going to do. I can see myself doing this until it's my turn.
That's right. You don't even need to leave the building.
Yeah. Mic drop.
How long have you been doing it?
Well, I started the training process. And again, this is important for people to know, is that, you know, I didn't pick up the phone one day and call a funeral home and say, listen, I'm going to come and sell your services for you. It's an industry that's very, very closely regulated. The Bereavement Authority of Ontario is the body that oversees everything we do. And so there are requirements. There's strict educational and licensing requirements that you have to meet. So the first part of it was taking a program at Humber College. So I was able to do that entirely online from my basement kitchen table and wherever I happened to be at the time. Really, two courses in particular that you have to take. One is on ethics and basically understanding the process of dying, the impact on families and the impact on people of death. And so you have to be the right person. Again, the way they look at it is you have to have an understanding and an empathy to be able to do this business at all, at any level. And then there's some great deal of legal requirements and knowledge and an understanding of what the law says that we're supposed to do in terms of respect, respectfully and with integrity, treating families when we're in this industry. Once you have the courses out of the way, then there's a fairly intensive exam by the authority, and two exams, I guess. I got those out of the way. And then in that period, while I was studying it, I was also studying the industry and trying to determine where I would apply my trade, as it were. I got to know the people at Comstock K in Peterborough, and I recognized in them the exact same passion for service that I have, the history that they had established of delivering that level of service. Dean and Carl and Ron Kay have collectively been in the business, I think it adds up to about 110 years between the three of them. You know, they were certainly going to be great mentors. And then the company that really the overriding entity is called Dignity Memorial. And they're part of a multinational corporation, or North America wide, that really does have it figured out. They understand that every detail matters, that what we do is important. Our role in serving families and serving people is an important one. And they provide a lot of tools and a lot of training to do that. So that was about a year and a half ago when I started the journey, and been actively licensed and working for 15 months or so. The first three of which were learning. You know, what do I do? How do I do this? What am I really offering people? Right out of the gate, I don't think I had any problem talking to people and listening and understanding and hearing, but just literally how to do it in the way that was going to be best for them, and how to put plans together and all the little details that would matter, how to get that on paper so that when the time came, what I documented would be readily and easily understood by the funeral director in the future. They say, oh yeah, this is what they wanted, and this is what they've secured, and this is what they've paid for, and this is what we're going to give them. It takes a little while, but it came to me fairly quickly, because again, I approached it from what I believe is the right perspective. I'm here to help.
You and I have had a chance to talk a couple of times before this chat today. You haven't encountered any outrageous requests yet, or anything too unusual yet.
I think everything is unusual. There really aren't any two that are the same. Yes, you have the, I want to have my hamster with me in the coffin. You have things that might seem strange, but I understand them, because the person that's sitting across from me is really opening up. By the time we get into this, they're really starting to tell me what is important to them. And so at that point, it doesn't seem strange to me.
Right.
And you have the certainly there are people that come in and their first thing is, oh, well, I don't care. I mean, just scatter me in the wind. You know, that's a smokescreen. Usually, often we find that's just it's almost kind of like nervous laughter. It's the I'm avoiding this for as long as I can answer. And I hope and feel that most of the time, when they start to feel comfortable with me as a person, as somebody that's really genuinely interested in what I do and what they wish, they start to, well, you know, maybe I would have, you know, friends come and say goodbye or something. And often we just simply ask them, you say, well, here, flip it around here for a moment. And what if you were out fishing and you're away for 5 or 6 days and you came back and you found out your best buddy had passed away and no one told you? His service, he's in the ground, he's gone, it's done. How would you feel about that? Would you feel bad that you didn't get a chance to say goodbye? Would it haunt you a little bit? And often, you know, those, and I don't want to pigeonhole and say it's always guys, but it frequently is. They just go, yeah, well, you know, maybe there'd be the odd person who would come. And I say, and I always tell them, like, honestly, I'm sure there's a half dozen people want to just come and make sure I'm gone. But in any case, whether it's truly a celebration or life, or if it's just an opportunity for family or friends to have some closure, there's some form of celebration or some form of recognition of a life lived is of value and is of importance, I believe. It's a closing chapter.
Some people say that they don't want any celebration, any service. It's written down that they don't.
Yep.
I feel that that needs to be honored. That's what they wanted.
Of course.
I realize that the people around that person find a way to have a celebration somehow because they need it.
They do. And there's two sides of that kind of situation. And there could be very genuine. It may not be just nervousness. They may just genuinely don't believe that there needs to be any big deal made of it, that their spiritual beliefs are such that they believe that the body is just a vessel, that my spirit will still live on in those that I've touched, my spirit will forever be of this universe, and so they really don't put any importance on the event of a funeral or a celebration, and I can respect that. I certainly have served people that is very true. In fact, the service that has been put in place for them is they will come into the funeral home. You know, some of these things are built into law, that there has to be a respectful handling of every deceased person in Ontario. So there are certain things that have to be done. That they are, in the end, they simply arrange for the minimum level of service, pick you up at place passing, bring you to our care, arrange for a disposition. Generally, in those cases, it's cremation. I have one family that literally what we're doing is we're picking, if they were passed, they would come into the funeral home, we'd arrange for the cremation. We had also then arranged for the scattering of their cremated remains at one of the a cemetery that's actually fairly local to where they live, that has a beautiful rose garden where they do this scattering. And many cemeteries have that. And so that's it. There will be never a family member has to come into the funeral home, and they will have their own recognition or get together as a family, quite independent of what we're doing as a service. So yeah, I mean, absolutely, that's what they want. That's what I put on paper. That's what they've prepaid for, and that's what will happen. The one thing I was there's some overlap between what I do and what funeral homes generally do and what estate managers may do or executors of an estate might have to do. There's that whole side of it as well that is important to consider. One of the things that I'm probably the only advice I ever give on the subject is point out that there are as long as you are alive, you are in control of everything. What you want, what you say, and as long as you're from sound mind, is what must be followed by law. However, at that moment, you pass over to the other side. Whoever you've entrusted with everything to do with your estate and your life, they now are the people we must listen to. So choose your executor wisely and ensure you've communicated to them, because of course, whatever we do, the final stage of all of it is to share that with those that are going to matter. Share what you've planned with your family, let them know you've taken that burden off them. Share that with whoever you've named as your executor, that these are my wishes, they've been documented, so all you need to do is go in there and sign off that saying this is what the plans were, this is what you're going to do, and I'm agreeing that you can go ahead and do it. If the family decides to do something else, that's still up to them, I suppose, and we must respect that. Right? That's the whole process, not complicated.
Well, you and I will be talking further about my own plan. And for now, I want to thank you for coming on the show, Frank Peters.
Well, it's certainly been my pleasure. It's not, it's no burden at all to spend time chatting with you.
You too.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right.
And here's another one for Frank. This is Leonard Cohen with Hallelujah.
heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah, hallelujah. And from your lips she drew the hallelujah, 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 God above. As for me, all I ever learned from love is how to shoot at someone who outdrew you. But it's not a cry that you hear tonight. It's not some pilgrim who claims to have seen the light. No, it's a cold and it's a very broken. Hallelujah, 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 I remember when I moved in you, and the holy dove she was moving too, and every single breath that we drew was hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. Done my best, I know it wasn't much. I couldn't feel, so I learned to touch. I've told the truth, I didn't come here to London just to fool you. And even though it all went wrong, I'll stand right here before the Lord of Song with nothing, nothing on.